All right.
Great, thank you. I will let you all see myself here for just a few minutes. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Tucson Pima County Historical Commission meeting of Wednesday, May 13th, 2026, called to order at 12:05 p.m. And if we could have roll call, Tracy, please.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. All right. So we'll start with Alice Sadongi.
Here.
Andrew Christopher.
Here.
Blake Houghton.
Here.
Carlos Lozano.
Here.
Courtney Marks.
Here.
Gary Miner.
Here.
Helen Erickson.
Here.
J.J. Lamb. Jessica Bassey.
Here.
Joel Ireland. Kathy Kubish.
Here.
Ken Scoville.
Present.
Mauro Trejo.
Here.
Rhonda Kendrick. Savannah McDonald.
Here.
Terry Majewski.
Here.
Tim Haggard. Righty. We're good to go, Terry.
Okay, thank you. So Rhonda said a few minutes ago that her password is resetting, so she'll be there in about 10 minutes. So we're good for now. So let's watch for her. Thank you. Item two is land acknowledgement. Commissioner Lozano, could you present that for us, please?
Sure thing. On behalf of the residents of the city of Tucson, the city of South Tucson, and Pima County, we honor the tribal nations who have served as caretakers of this land from time immemorial and respectfully acknowledge the ancestral homelands of Tohono O'odham Nation and the multi-millennial presence of the Pascua-Yaqui tribe within Pima County. Consistent with the TPCHC's commitment to diversity and inclusion, we strive toward building equal partner relationships with Arizona's tribal nations.
Thank you. Let's move on to item three, which is approval of the TPCHC minutes from the meeting of 4-8-2026. Could I have a motion to approve as submitted, please?
This is Courtney. I motion.
Great. Thank you. Who will second?
This is Rhonda. I'll second.
Oh, thank you. And when did you join? Just like now, 12:07 or so?
12:07.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any comments or any further discussion on those minutes from April 8th? Okay. If not, let's go ahead and take roll call.
Okay. Alice Sadongi.
Aye.
Andrew Christopher.
Aye.
Blake Houghton.
Aye.
Carlos Lozano.
Aye.
Courtney Marks.
Aye.
Gary Miner.
Aye.
Helen Erickson.
Aye.
J.J. Lamb. Jessica Bassey.
Aye.
Joel Ireland. Kathy Kubish.
Aye.
Ken Scoville.
Yes.
Mauro Trejo.
Yes.
Rhonda Kendrick.
Yes.
Savannah McDonald.
Aye.
Terry Majewski.
Aye.
And Tim Haggard.
14.
All right, motion passes 14-0.
Great, thank you. Item 4, chairperson summary of current events. I don't think I have anything at this time. Okay. Item 5 is recently posted subcommittee legal action reports and minutes, just directing your attention to where these things are posted on the website for the city clerk's office and boards and commissions. Okay, item 6 is removal appointments to commission subcommittees, working groups, etc. Hold on a second. I'm sorry, I'm battling this weird thing that this cough that keeps coming back. I do have an announcement to make. Commissioner Ireland has some serious health issues, and he expressed that he will be resigning from the commission, but I haven't seen the official notice of that yet. And I'd like to send him a card on behalf of the commission if no one objects. But he also, importantly, is on Plans Review Subcommittee. So, and I let him know that we would be removing him from the subcommittee. So I need a motion to remove Commissioner Joel Ireland from the Plans Review Subcommittee, effective immediately. Is there, would someone make that motion?
Hi, Terry, this is Blake.
Kathy Kubish, I will show motion.
Okay, hold on just a second. Okay, so that was Blake made the motion, and Kathy, will you second?
I will second.
Yeah.
Okay, so Blake and Kathy, is there any discussion of the motion? If not, could we have a vote on the motion, please?
Yes. Alice Sadonghi?
Aye.
Andrew Christopher?
Aye.
Blake Houghton?
Aye.
Carlos Lozano?
Aye.
Courtney Marks?
Aye.
Gary Miner?
Aye.
Helen Erickson?
Aye.
Jessica Bassey?
Aye.
Kathy Kubish?
Aye.
Ken Scoville?
Yes.
Mauro Trejo?
Aye.
Rhonda Kendrick?
Aye.
Savannah McDonald?
Aye.
Terry Majewski?
Aye.
And still no Tim Haggard?
Not that I see, no. And he hasn't okay. texted back.
Okay. Motion passes 14-0.
Great, thank you. Okay, item 7 is reports from City of Tucson, Pima County, and City of South Tucson staff. 7A is City of Tucson. Go ahead, Desiree.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Work on the commissary and Donaldson House at Fort Lowell is complete. Staff had the opportunity to tour the completed site, and it was really beautiful, wonderfully done. So just kudos to the project team and all involved. The ribbon cutting for the Fort Lowell Historic Projects has been set for June 12th at 8:30 a.m. And we're also working with Parks and Recreation Department to arrange a special tour for the commission and the Fort Lowell Historic Zone Advisory Board. So more on that to come. There are a couple reviews coming up at the Plans Review Subcommittee that I wanted to inform you about. There are projects that you all have asked about or we've discussed a bit. So the first is the Hacienda Motel at 1742 North Oracle is going to Paris tomorrow for a courtesy review. The site consists of multiple buildings, a few smaller buildings at the rear, I believe it's three are proposed for demolition with new construction to replace it. There's also a large sculpture proposed to be sited on top of an existing building on the site. PRS has no regulatory role in the review, so this would be a courtesy review, but staff is taking it for input. They're not utilizing the optional zoning overlays that would trigger historic review typically. So because of that, this might be the only public meeting related to this project. So if you're interested in learning more, weighing in, I encourage you to attend this meeting or send in comments prior. There is also a proposed project going through historic review currently that will need to get mayor and council approval. It went to the West University Historic Zone Advisory Board last night and will go to PRS next. This is for proposed parking lot at 714 North Euclid. Both PRS and the advisory board had seen it previously as a courtesy review. But again, because we're going to require mayor and council approval, I wanted to let you know about that. So this was, some people might know this as the Euclid Hotel project. There have been 4 contributing buildings on the site that were demolished, and a replacement plan was approved as required by our code, and was approved by mayor and council. So any revisions to that plan, and this would be considered a revision to go back to mayor and council. Additionally,
yeah, Ken has a question. So, Ken, do you want to wait till Desiree's done?
I'll wait till she's done. Wait.
Okay, thank you, and I'll call on you then. Thank you. Go ahead, Desiree.
Thanks. So that is coming to PRS later in the month. It has not been scheduled yet, but it will likely be the second meeting this month. And lastly, I had previously reported that the City of Tucson was awarded a State Heritage Preservation Fund grant through SHPO, and the project was for Historic Resource Survey for City of Tucson Parks and Recreation Facilities study. We're hoping this is just precautionary and we'll be able to move forward, but SHPO has informed us that they're not currently signing new agreements until after the state budget is passed, because there's some fear that the Historic Preservation Fund might not be might be on the chopping block or might not get funded to the extent that was expected. So I wanted to let you know about that. We'll keep you posted. Again, I think it's just precautionary. That's all we have. I do have some comments from Lydia Barker from DTM, who is not available to attend today, but I think that's maybe later on the agenda.
Yeah, that'd be great. And so since you've already even though there's an agenda item on PRS, should we consider this your PRS update, or we'll ask others at that time? Which?
Yeah, I don't have anything else for PRS other than what I already mentioned.
Okay, we'll just say that it was reported on earlier. Okay, so Ken, what's your question?
Question, again, it's on the Hacienda project. If that complex is currently on the National Register, correct? Is the removal of those buildings endanger the nomination for that complex?
That's part of what we're going to talk about tomorrow. We're seeking input from PRS on that. We'll also be consulting with SHPO, but because this isn't a historic landmark, it's not an NHPZ, you know, it's a little bit different than those typical reviews.
Those things, but what is the vintage of those back buildings? Do we know the age of those buildings?
They're all the same part of all built at the same time. They're part of the original hotel, which is, I believe it was in the inventory form, it says post-war, or it says 1947, but I think there was some additional research that shows a couple years later. We don't know the exact year.
Okay, well, seems like the buildings to the north are probably a little earlier vintage, by the way. The design is sort of a first attempt at Mission Revival a little bit, but you know, I've been involved with this since the get-go on all this. Mm-hmm. Has anybody tried to convince them about not demolishing those buildings, or anybody pushed a little bit on that? And I realize what the situation is, but it doesn't mean that you question a little bit. But I think that's an important question to find out if those buildings are eligible. Is it still going to be eligible for its listing?
Yes. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's a National Register program. Only the keeper of the National Register can decide that. And the Chabot, you know, kind of has delegated some authority through that. So it's not something that I can make that determination on. But, you know, as a CLG, we certainly provide our thoughts, our opinions about that. So that's what we're going to discuss tomorrow. I don't want to get too into the weeds without, you know, the applicant notified. So I just wanted to let you all know that there is this discussion happening tomorrow at PRS. If you would like to learn more about the project and provide any comments, the plans are all online.
Okay. Well, if I wake up tomorrow morning, I will try and be there.
Sounds good.
Okay, thank you. And Carlos, you had a question?
Yeah, a few things, actually. And then what time tomorrow and what time would comments have to be received in order to be considered?
By tonight, you get their comments, yeah.
Okay.
The meeting is tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Okay. So I wasn't going to ask about that, but it reminded me. So just out of curiosity, the signs are not in jeopardy as far as you know?
No, they're planning to keep the signs. If anything, there may be some, you know, desire to rehabilitate it. It's not in the current proposal, but there's no proposal to demolish the signs.
Okay, because I did want to ask you about the code amendments that are being considered, and mm-hmm. And there was one thing that I wanted to mention. So in the Heritage Landmark Sign Amendment, when we drafted that like a decade ago, we had a fixed date in terms of determining what is historic, and that was because that sign code administrator thought that if we had the date any younger, that it would open this floodgate of signs that were not worthy. But again, that was like a decade ago, and I think that the normal procedure would be to have a rolling date on what is considered. I mean, it doesn't make it historic, but it allows mm-hmm. it to be considered, right? So there's that. So if is that something that might be considered a code amendment?
I would encourage you to send me an email about that, like referencing the specific section in the code you're talking about, and then we could share it with the team. They are working on red lines currently, trying to wrap up like this week, so it might not be able to make it into this package, but that doesn't mean, of course, there will be community engagement continued, but we're not able to put in there now, we can certainly look to put in, you know, in a different package, but I would encourage you to send it now and perhaps we can look at that.
Okay. And then another thing was, speaking of code amendments, is this, you're not also including the large scale data center code amendment in this package you're looking at, is it?
So no, that was separate.
Would you or anybody present have like an update on, did that go to the Planning Commission recently? Does anyone know about that?
I don't have that a specific update, but if you have questions, I can definitely get them answered.
Yeah. We were, and so what we were thinking is that the commission has not really weighed in on this previously, but anything that affects the watershed really does affect the whole cultural landscape of Tucson. And Tucson wouldn't be here if it weren't for the fact that we were at the confluence of these rivers. And anytime you drop the water table, you are radically affecting the entire cultural landscape. So I was thinking that at some point, you know, the commission ought to weigh in on this, but I was thinking of a proper way to do it. But I'll revisit that next month. And I think there was one other. Oh yeah. Oh, one more thing. Sorry. I may have been like just asleep when this was discussed, but isn't there an update on the Arizona Middle Housing Exemption, the SBB? 1118. You guys know what's going on with that?
There have been different amendments proposed. It has not yet been voted on. So it's still alive, but it's there hasn't been a final vote.
Okay, so it has, and you're saying at the state level?
Correct.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
I need one quick clarification. If we have questions, if we're a commissioner, can we ask questions at plans review tomorrow, or do I have to submit something tonight?
No, you need to submit, please. I think it's 5 p.m. I can send you that agenda if you don't have it. Or maybe, actually, Tracy, maybe you could send that out. Yes, go ahead, Tracy.
Yes, I was just going to let you know that Tim Haggard has joined.
Yes, I was going to mention that. And he said it was like 12:17. Is that what you have? Because he texted me at 12:17 saying he was joining.
Okay. I had 12:22, but if it was 12:17, then I can change it.
Maybe that's fine. That's okay with you, Tim?
Yep, that's fine.
Yes, right, because it could have taken him a minute.
Yeah, it took me a minute to get on. Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Anything else, Carlos or Ken?
No, and I'll just respond to the email that's going to get sent out.
Yeah, and Tracy, if you could just send the PRS agenda out to all commissioners that's been posted, you need me to send that to you, or can you get that from the website?
Go ahead and send it to me, just in case I'm not able to get it from the site.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry. Thanks. Bad cough. Okay, let's see. Item 7B is Pima County. We have Ian and staff, and there was an item included, a link to an update on the county and the Historic Preservation Office's consultation with Tribal Nations Board Policy Initiative. So hopefully you all had a chance to look at that, because Ian will be briefing us on that. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Quick staffing update, a positive update. I mentioned earlier in the year that we were actively going to be recruiting for two new positions, the first being a cultural resources preservation analyst that would be working with Courtney in the program that she is managing in our preservation programs. We have successfully hired Charlotte Hart, who many of you may know. Will be starting with us on Monday. We're very, very, very excited about Charlotte. She brings about 20 years of experience in the federal system. She holds a Master of Library and Information Sciences from the University of Arizona, as well as a Master's in Anthropology from the school, went through the applied program like I did. She actually interned for the county. She is very well known by our tribal communities, and so we are just ecstatic to welcome her in on Monday, and so you will see her next month. And our cultural resources compliance manager position, unfortunately, our first round that went out, we were not successful in identifying a candidate, so we have reposted it with a little bit more aggressive targeting. We've also revised that the minimum qualifications for that job that required meeting Arizona Antiquities Act project director or principal investigator qualifications to hopefully broaden it, understanding that that is very limiting for us in who can meet that. So that has been reposted. We have posted that job description with Society for American Archaeology, American Cultural Resources Association, RPA, I mean, you name it. So we would very much appreciate any help in advertising that. And we're going to have that open until filled. So the first review of candidates should be, it's been open for 2 weeks. We're going to keep it open for at least another 2 weeks, do a review, and then see where we're at. Silverbell. As you guys know, with RTA Next passing, Silverbell, the next segment, not the current city segment, has been under a lot of discussion because the RTA has put that project in period one, which was, and I'm saying this, fairly irresponsible, understanding the real complexity that goes with that project. We the county are going to be the lead on that project. It kind of skirts a little bit of city, tiny bit, and then it's all county and Marana. But Pima County is taking the lead. We are right now trying to work with the Army Corps of Engineers, who is basically determined that under current Waters of the U.S. rules that there no longer is a federal nexus for that project. And so they are contemplating terminating the programmatic agreement because of the absence of any waters that would require a 404 permit. That, of course, has a lot of implications. It formally removes tribes from any requirement for consultation. But fortunately, the county is well suited to meet or exceed those federal rules, and the tribes are obviously going to be in partnership as much as we can. I mean, I know several of our tribal partners have questioned why this project is moving forward, and we have no control over that when the voting populace voted majorly for it as part of that package. So I will continue to update you as I learn more, but there's going to be a lot of intentional pre-design work done to inform design, understanding the constraints that may exist to maximize avoidance. We're also looking at other strategies in raising the roadway, so lots more to come. Carlos, do you want me to go to you or just finish up? It's up to you.
Just about that project. Is there any way, I don't know, you know, how the county does this, is there any way to have that be like designated scenic or have like an overlay over?
It's already designated scenic, which is what was the whole premise of the kind of contentious issue on the city project when TEP wanted to move their line, because in order to widen the roadway, they had to move their line from one side of the road to the other. Well, that triggered them to underground their line per those rules. But given the sensitivity of the archaeology, we went in front of the design review board to request a variance to allow them to overhead it, which TMA did not like. But we had representation from Hopi, Tana'atam, and Gila River on that DRB meeting, who pleaded with the committee to allow the variance because of the impacts that undergrounding that line would have that could be avoided by keeping it overhead. And the DRB voted unanimously to allow the variance. So we anticipate that that would also have to occur in this next segment. From a standpoint of what the scenic corridor designation does from the ability of constructability, it really doesn't do much because the roadway is allowed to be widened, right? That's been voted on and it has to meet what was presented. We can't reduce that. It has to meet what was presented in the package. All we can do is try to design it as thoughtfully as possible where if there's, you know, if there are significant impacts that would happen in a specific area, if we widened east, is there ability to widen west, minimizing those impacts? It may have more costs, but we will have to definitely consider all of those factors. It's really just an unfortunate project, to be quite honest.
Okay, thanks. So then is the scenic designation, is that just along the Pima County part, or is that City of Tucson too?
You know, that's a good question. I know it's within the City of Tucson's part. I believe that Pima County and City of Tucson have kind of grandfathered each designation in. So I believe that the entire Silverbell route, at least up to Ina, is considered scenic, but I'd have to double check that.
Okay. And then the reason I mentioned an overlay is an overlay would, you know, have some effect on the land use, because my concern or my secondary concern about Silverbell is that it's just going to become a massive, you know, like a frontage road for I-10, and there's going to be Walmarts and Walgreens and mattress stores all up and down there. That was my concern about an overlay that might limit that somehow. Could that?
Yeah. So the issue with that is basically the annexation abilities of towns, right? So Marana is really the one that pushed this project onto the RTA. Marana is the one that is the most likely candidate to do exactly that. Unfortunately, the county cannot institute an overlay over town annexed property. And even if we did do an overlay on the pieces that are the county, if the town annexed, that overlay would be null and void, and it would be subject to the town rules. So I anticipate that development sprawl is going to occur from Ina south as Marana continues to annex more. But I know that the county has several conservation properties. The city's got some open space properties and some park properties along that area. There's a lot to it. But yes, unfortunately, once this roadway gets widened, which several transportation professionals believe is not a prudent use of money given the widening of I-10, the new Sunset Interchange, but it's done. I mean, the voters voted on it. Now we just have to implement it as smart as possible.
Okay, thanks a lot for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Ken?
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Or Ken, do you want to do your question quickly?
No, I want Ian to finish and then I'll go.
Okay.
Right, so two more things. Actually, one thing before I get to the policy. Good news. Desiree and I were at the Fort Lowell commissary kind of a staff review. And I just wanted to let you know that this project was submitted and we've been notified that this project is getting a governor's award on the 30th of this month. So really excited about that. Really want to congratulate PMM, especially in the extraordinary work that they've done. And then another project that's getting an award is the Tucson Heritage video series. And if you remember, as part of the Silver Bell project, when it was under kind of county leadership, one of the things that we wanted to build into this project because of how intrusive it was is how do we educate the public on a cultural landscape of this magnitude? And we partnered with the University of Arizona School of Theater and Film and an award-winning documentary filmmaker named Lisa Malamat, who created with students a series of six films that are available, hosted on the Pima County's website. A feature-length film is going to be released later this fall and is going to be screened at the Loft, at the U of A, and other venues. But the sixth series of short films was nominated and has been we got notified that that, too, is getting an award. And so if you haven't seen that, I can send the link to Tracy to the website. Lydia Otero's on there. Samuel Fayance on there. It's a really impressive group of films that the we used RTA city funding. And then we also and then the county was a producer on the film. So on the films. So really excited about that. So lastly, the policy. As you know, I presented the idea of the policy. We engaged with, I believe it's 16 federally recognized tribes on that policy. As you can imagine, it's been a little bit slow to kind of get responses, but we've gotten time. We then proceeded with presenting a draft policy as a foundation that obviously is ongoing discussion. To our board of supervisors and to county administration, that is the memorandum that there's a link to in the agenda. The tribes have now all seen that draft. We do have some engagement from, or a promise of engagement from Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community, Tana Autumn. We've had in-person discussions with them, and Pascua Yaqui we've engaged with. We have a couple of tribes who have declined to participate, not because they don't believe in the policy, but because of the fact that they believe in their way in which they would consult with Pima County on this, that they would defer to either Tana Autumn or Pascua Yaqui or just the four Southern tribes in general. So we are making headway. One key change that you'll notice from that policy to what it is today is really in the definition of cultural landscape, as well as in the definition of how we define the values, the kind of inseparability between the biological and what is traditionally the cultural materials, right? So we've augmented that definition to acknowledge a worldview that is not really conforms with Western culture. So the beings, the traditions that go along with the practice of indigenous culture for these descendant communities. And so we've revised that language and we revised the definition of a cultural landscape to say a geographic area that includes cultural, natural, ecological, and spiritual features associated with the historical, cultural, ceremonial, or traditional practices of a community. And we have a little bit more after that. So we expect to spend the majority of the summer on refining this policy, and we do expect it to go to the board likely in September, is the goal of 2026. That's what I got.
That's wonderful, Ian. And many of the tribes that I've worked with have repeatedly stated that cultural resources include natural resources. You know, so it's something that the tribes in Arizona at least have been being very vocal about it, and it's great that the counties responded.
Terry, one last thing. Another thing we're doing in terms of outreach, to really reach out and kind of set an example for local governments is we're Chris and I are attending the National Association of Tribal Historic Preservation Officers Conference in Albuquerque and presenting this policy at that forum in August. So we're really excited about that too.
And that'll become more and more important when local governments, including counties, will be maybe the gatekeepers, whereas the states can't be as much, you know, or the feds in some cases, some agencies. Yeah. So it's great. So Ken, your question briefly, so we can move on.
I just wanted to know if there's my own swan song. Any updates? Did you have a meeting about the Adkins property?
Yeah. So, we actually, had an update request from Supervisor Scott, who I believe is attending, a Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association or HOA meeting later this week. Briefed him and understanding that there are still ongoing discussions between, you know, county and city. Ken, I wish I could give you a better answer, but, there's a political kind of discussion going on at the upper levels.
How shocking.
Well, and I will be honest with you. I mean, it's no secret. You know, there is a very, likely scenario that the county is going to be issuing a new bond or at least submitting a bond proposal and creating a bond advisory committee. And I know that Fort Lowell has been discussed in that capacity as well as a potential resolution. Whether Atkins can wait till then, whether the property can wait till then, it's not out of my hands, but I continue to advise on the prioritization of that property. So.
Well, and even if we could eke out something of a stabilization approach for right now into something else.
I do think that, you know, and I want to remind this commission, if you look at the master plan and you look at the preservation plan, the stabilization that occurred by the county in when the bond was passed and implemented, it was meant as a stopgap to allow Atkins to continue to exist until phase one of the master plan was complete and reevaluate whether Atkins should remain as a contributing feature to phase two of the master plan, which would emphasize and prioritize the fort, notably the parade ground. So it is built into that plan a consideration that Atkins is intrusive. And by no means was it meant for perpetual, preservation or adaptive reuse. So that is going to be part of the conversation if and when a plan is put in place to activate phase two of the master plan.
And I've been aware of that tension for years because some people think the story is the fort. And those of us like me that think the story is people living on the desert through all the different evolutions of things. So I
agree.
And like most things that happen, the way things happen, there's a certain hope by certain groups that things collapse. So then it's out of the way and it's null and void. And one quick perspective on Marana and why they accelerated the time up. I think that, and this is how hard the game's played, my perspective, they wanted to make sure that they got Silver Bell done during the Trump administration, because we're anti everything right now. So I think that's why I got accelerated. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Helen.
Yes, I just wanted to tell Ian that I think what we'll do is take that definition of cultural landscape back to the Historic Landscape Subcommittee, because we definitely put together a definition, as you may recall, based on the Park Service definition, which did include animals and general ecology.
Flora and fauna, yeah.
Right, flora and fauna. But I think adding spiritual dimension would be very important, and mm-hmm. I think it would help if that definition and our definition were consistent. So I will put that onto the agenda for our next meeting.
Great. And again, I know we've talked about a lot of different avenues for how the commission, whether it goes through a committee or not in terms of this policy, but at any time, if any commissioner has insights that they'd like to share on the policy, we are more than open ears. It doesn't need to be formal. If the commission wants to, at the end game, if the commission wants to take a particular stance on the policy that is presented to the board in support of it, that would be great. But I don't want you to feel like that any commissioner can't write and participate in the creation of this policy. Obviously, we are prioritizing our descendant communities in terms of the tribes to really spearhead this for us and help us understand what the appropriate language should be, free of any federal model that may or may not exist, because we want them to think this is how it should be done and help us and teach us how it should be done, rather than us imposing a system that only works for us to get to our endpoint, which I think is the unfortunate way that the federal system works.
Right.
Go ahead.
I think that is definitely that was it, the intent of the original cultural landscape discussion that was held by the subcommittee. So I think this input is very important. Also, I would just like to mention that J.J. Lamb is going to initiate the working group so that perhaps we could have a general discussion about this when she returns from Australia.
Perfect.
Okay. Ian, I wanted to mention or ask you, when do you plan to present the policy to the Board of Supervisors?
September. The target is September 26th, so this September.
Okay, so definitely either July or August might be the best time to maybe do a formal motion, and you could maybe present us, just say if things have changed or will it change at this link that we provided. Will you?
No, that's a static memo. That's a one-time memo. The okay. Document is obviously living with us, and we're keeping a history of changes, but I think ideally by August, we should have a pretty good, we'll call it 90% plan. And then I do want to provide an opportunity to get more input at the TIPO conference. But I do think I could probably present it at the August meeting, understanding that we may tweak a couple of things here and there, but it's enough that I think that the commission could at that point review it for at its current form and make a motion if they so wish.
Okay. So, and then you said to board in September.
Correct.
Okay. That's good. So yeah, remind me. Yeah, I will remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is the SDCP 25th. Obviously we want this. This is really how we advance our understanding of the culture resources element of the plan, but it's not no longer in that SDCP cultural silo. And then there's a natural silo, and then there's a ranching, you know, riparian silo. We are starting to de-wall the SDCP, keeping the same planning foundation, but modernizing it to acknowledge the value sets that we can't ignore we have learned from in the past 20 years. And we're going to continue to learn from. But rather than forming a group at the time of planning of the SDCP, coming up with something, disbanding the group. This is a permanent partnership. We are Pima County is proclaiming as part of this policy that the management of our conservation lands must be done in partnership and in stewardship with our descendant communities, not in a framework of just consultation when it's appropriate for us. So.
Right. Yeah. And having been part of the original SDCP, which was massive, 75 people or something were included. But I think that was an effort to get some of the really disjunct groups to speak to each other and trust each other. So,
I apologize. Yeah, I don't mean to insinuate that anyone did anything wrong. The SDCP was brilliant at the time that it was done. Unfortunately, in its implementation, there are a lot of folks who misinterpret the SDCP as a one-time plan that never gets, it's a living plan, right? And we want to try to foster that living document and showcase it for our public and our business communities and our conservation communities as we are constantly working to evolve this thing.
Oh, no. And I wasn't criticizing. I was just saying that. I think it was important then, and now it's time. Now it's time to evolve and grow, and the fact that the tribes did not have the voice that they have now. I mean, the dialogue, the ability to have a relationship with the tribes in partnership has really developed over the past decades, I would say. Especially, so it's wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you guys.
I have a comment. This is Alice.
Okay, Alice, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to commend the staff for putting this plan together. I think it's great, but it's just in my experience, when organizations are trying to be more responsive and, as you say, to really integrate this into county plans and procedures, just be aware that it's going to cost some money. So make sure you have that in the budget, because tribes are going to take you up on it when you say, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to integrate and incorporate at every level, and know that your staff may need additional training or some kind of resource to actually make that happen. So I think this is a good step, but I just am putting that out there just based on my experience.
Yeah, okay, Alice, that's great feedback.
Yep.
Thank you. Well, great, Ian. Does Courtney or Scott, is anyone else on your staff have anything to update?
Guys, anything else?
I do not. Thank you.
Not today. I think we're
okay. Well, sure.
Covered.
Appreciate
you.
Okay. That wonderful update, Ian. Thank you. Let's move on then to 7C, which is City of South Tucson. Joshua is not on. So, Carlos, what do you have for us?
All right. Yeah. I met with, Josue on Monday and a couple of their council members the College of Architecture and Planning and Landscape Architecture, Masters in Urban Planning, had their capstone presentations on Monday, and they did a really great one on South 4th Avenue as a historic commercial corridor, and that was it was really well done, and but it had specific recommendations for their mayor and council, and hopefully they will begin to implement some of these great ideas that they had. Some of them are including like an overlay and a lot of really interesting, very sensitive urbanization ideas that just a really creative bunch of young people, minds at Kapla there. And so we'll see if they implement any of those things. And I'm also, on a separate issue, I'm also trying to get in contact with the owner, developer of those beautiful, the Arizona Children's Home that's about 100 years old. I can't remember the exact date. And try to encourage them to adaptively reuse those buildings rather than demolish them, because they've been sitting empty for years now, and there's a big risk of fire and a lot of vandalism going on there and homelessness. So City of South Tucson may have to start enforcing their codes, and that could actually push them closer to a demolition. But we'll see what we can do on that. And I think that was all I had from City of South Tucson.
Okay, Helen, did you have a comment for Carlos? You taking your hand down.
It just took a long time for the hand to go down.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to check. thank you. Thank you, Carlos. Excuse me. 7D is Tucson Department of Transportation and Mobility. Desiree, you say you had something from Lydia or Mauro. Did you want to ask Carlos something or something else?
Just any update on the Spanish Trail?
You could ask Ian about that, because the county purchased, there's two parcels, and the one with that's currently occupied is not really historic. The other one burned down, but the county purchased that. Am I right? Is that what you were wondering about?
Yeah, just what's happening with it. What are they doing with it?
I guess they're still. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ian.
No, they're still figuring that out. There's a couple of ideas floating. Low income housing is one. They're looking at a potential public use. Number two for, I don't remember what department, building a new building. But currently it's going to have, it's unknown at that point, but I can follow up with you on when I get information. Typically I'm not really privy to those conversations from a standpoint of the planning aspects. They are aware kind of potential salvage opportunities. But it's at this point, it's unclear.
Okay. So you're saying, because I had the same concerns, Mauro, about at least trying to maybe retain some
the fireplace
tiny vestige of what it used to be, because there is like a little cabana still extant, and then there's the giant poles, which they should be cleaned up, and if engineering would say that they're still sturdy, I mean, I think those should be retained if possible, but made to look...
The fireplace as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
what is that?
Fireplace in the center of it. They have a big stone fireplace in the center that looks like it's in decent condition.
Okay. Wow.
Well,
thanks for
I will tell you, after the Northwest Service Center and the bowling sign, our facilities is like all about preserving these cool kind of remnants, because they thought it was so cool to do that. So I don't think it's out of the question. I just think they need to identify a purpose, which then we can then start to articulate and understand a little bit better some really cool design options. So
That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you both. Okay, Desiree, were you reporting under 7D for Lydia?
Yes, she sent me a couple things. So there's an open house event for the public to learn about the Grant Road project, specifically phases 5 through 6, which extend from Fremont Avenue to Sparkman Boulevard. That's happening May 18th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Tucson Association of Realtors building, which is at 2445 North Tucson Boulevard. I'll forward a flyer that she sent for distribution. And she also mentioned that there was a list of projects sent to her via email with some questions that the commission wanted to have some more information on. I think Commissioner Lozano sent her that list. She said she's still working to gather information for the group, and she hopes to have more to report on in June.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on quickly through the Item 8, Commission, Subcommittee, Other Committee, Council, Commission Status Reports. So 8A was Plans Review. So shall we just say, Desiree, that you already reported on this under 7A?
Yes.
Okay. 8B is Downtown Neighborhoods and Residents Council, if Commissioner Haggard isn't here, which I don't think.
We didn't have any meeting, so I have nothing to report. Thank you.
No meeting per... Commissioner Haggard. Okay. Item 8C is Historic Landscape Subcommittee. Commissioner Erickson?
Yes. We met on Wednesday, April 22nd, hybrid meeting, and reviewed a project for the El Pueblo complex. And basically, there are six buildings there that have been identified as eligible for listing in the National Register, but no significant archaeology. And what was proposed, splash pad, walking path, a few things like this, basically would not impact the character of the site. So basically, we appreciate the fact that we're working productively with parks here. And this was approved as it was presented. Second item, Commissioner Kubish presented information on the content and condition of the signage along 6th Avenue in front of Armory Park. The signage, incidentally, was originally funded by the Arizona Preservation Foundation and TPCHC. All the signage needs repair. The text is essentially unreadable at this point. There are two angled signs on wrought iron stands, and those basically were deemed appropriate, although possibly a bit high. And despite being an intrusion, those were appropriate. There is another sign that looks more like an informational sign that we concluded was not appropriate for the site. What we would like to see is that the content would be revised. Some of the content is definitely good, and Commissioner Kubish, I'll let you jump in a minute on that if you wish. And what we would like to see is information also about the importance of the park included in that text. Whether we'll be able to find funding for this or where we're going to look for funding for this, we do not know, but it's definitely something that should happen, given that Armory Park is probably the most historic park that we have. The other thing that happened was Dr. Courtney Rose from Pima County presented an update on Pima County's program for priority cultural resources, especially issues involving the protection of such resources from vandalism and misuse. And her presentation was such that we felt this is something that we should probably provide to the whole commission at some time in the not-too-distant future, because it's a very important question, how you make these resources available to people, but how you protect them at the same time. And finally, there will be no meeting in May. The next meeting will be on June 24th. Commissioner Kubish, did you want to add anything to the discussion on the Armory Park?
Thank you, Helen. Not much, really. I agree with updating the signs to, they're good as they stand, but they only deal with past history, and I think inclusion of more recent history would be a really nice addition. You may want to consider a third sign. And the informational sign could be possibly relocated closer to the senior center and used informationally. But that's
okay. I don't know where we would look for funding, but I think that if we can start thinking, that this should be on the radar somewhere, that would be good. Desiree, I will get in touch with you about it as well.
What about the ward, asking the ward office, too, where that is?
I think that would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Because they might be able to do that, help with that.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Thank you. Okay, let's move on then to item 8D, Transportation Subcommittee. Commissioner Lozano.
I'll be brief. Thank you. Regarding Tucson Electric Power, the big 110-foot power poles, there was an appeal going to mayor and council this month, but Terry, I just found out that has been delayed until June 9th. And so when you send out the TPCHC comment, you might want to change the dates on that. So that's June 9th. I'll send you an email, though.
Thank you.
And then, let's see. Oh, on Rio Nuevo, I've been kind of trying to keep track of some of their projects, but I can't attend those meetings because I'm at work. And I think maybe I will. Terry, if I send an email to you, could you forward it to Commissioner Haggard and see maybe if he can hook me up with someone that he might know on DNARC that attends those meetings so that I could get. Okay, that'd be great.
Sure, and I'll put you two in touch. Yeah.
That'd be great. And then I think that's everything, except for I don't know if we're going to have a quorum for next week's meeting. Ken, can you make it next week?
I'm planning on making it.
Great. Okay, I sent out a couple of emails, didn't hear back. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Any quick questions? No? Okay, thank you. Item 8E is Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Commissioner McDonald.
Yes, hi, thanks. So I'm reporting on the last two meetings since I missed this meeting last month. I apologize. So in April, the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development met, and they actually had like some working groups to decide their new revamped subcommittees, and they concluded and naming two new subcommittees. First is the Housing Innovation and Development Subcommittee, where they're going to work on development and housing and market conditions. And then the second one that's new is the Community Engagement and Collaboration Subcommittee, where they're going to work on public affairs, advocacy, and communications. So they're just kind of reorganizing a little bit in a thoughtful way. They're also organizing and preparing for their presentation to mayor and council that is needed to extend the commission and anticipated to be approved. And then the more recent meeting that was this month, there was some interesting good reports from the city of Tucson, including a new resource dashboard called the Tucson Pima Shelter and Community Resource Dashboard, where people can instantly look up available shelter beds from at any given point, which is helpful. There aren't enough, but it gives people kind of access to that information through the GIS online. And then other things they reported that they're working on is an upcoming middle housing competition for their plan library, working on a process for middle housing land divisions, so kind of subdivisions to promote middle housing, dividing lots, things like that. And then also working on an amendment to the zoning code, just starting the work on it for shelter use. So that's about it. And then they were just kind of planning out their next few meetings, agendas, their kind of work plan for what they hope to accomplish in the next few months. So.
Great. Thank you. That sounds like a very sort of a positive thing that it's good because they're getting their feet. Yeah. Yeah. So I have a question. Tracy, did you see that Alice left because she had to leave at 1?
Yes. I just looked away for a minute. I still saw her on at 1:06. So she may have just left in between now and then.
Okay. Just go ahead and pick a time.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's, okay, let's see, left. We'll say, what, 108 or something like that? 107.
Yeah, we'll say 108.
Yeah. Because when I see the LAR, I'll know that we've discussed it, so that's good. Okay, great. All right, item 8F is Budget Subcommittee. I'll be calling a meeting of the subcommittee, and I believe it's Commissioner Minor and Commissioner Erickson, am I correct, or brain dead? Could be either one. because we need to, I have a bunch of things that we need to vote on so we can close out the budget for the current fiscal year. So, okay, well, so I'm going to look at dates next week because we have to hurry. But I'm waiting on a little bit more information from a couple providers. We'll schedule a meeting. So that's the week of what? Week of whatever. Next week, I'm going to say. All right, item 8G is Outreach and Training Subcommittee. Commissioner Lamb is not on, but was Commissioner Kubisch, are you reporting?
Reporting, yes. The Outreach and Training.
Yeah, you're breaking up.
Okay. The Outreach and Training Subcommittee held its last meeting. Okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. Our last meeting was on April 8th. And the main topic of discussion was a webinar to be held on May 5th. Our presenter was Emily Freeman, who leads Boulder, Colorado's transition to a circular economy. Her presentation included group discussion about what Tucson's reasons or why might be, why Tucson might want to move to a circular economy. And finding the why is meaningful to Tucson residents as a whole and will be important to be moving deconstruction forward and a circular economy forward in Tucson. The whys included, there were several, this was part of a group discussion. The main thrust seemed to be both an ecological drive, preservation of the natural environment, and with the coming of data centers, this becomes more urgent. Also, to protect its heritage of the city and its historic resource, our sense of place. Tucson has a unique character, but it is easy to lose this with the push toward expansion, middle housing, you know, the increasing pace of demolition to replace the old with the new. So we need to, you know, this is something that is just in its beginning phases. I've been doing some of the foundational research. Andrew Christopher has also contributed some really good information. There were 13 commission members attending. The webinar will be posted on Tucson's website. And there will also be a seminar in Phoenix in November this year, the annual deconstruction and circular deconstruction seminar. And so that will be something that I know Jay and I are planning on attending. Interesting seminar. It should be a really interesting seminar. I would also just mention that the NAPC, National Association for Preservation Commissions, is having a seminar tomorrow. We are members of the NAPC. We did renew our membership for the following year. So anyone who needs information how to get to these seminars, I'm happy to provide it. And that's all I've got unless there are questions.
Any questions for Kathy? Yeah, and Kathy, we're in the process of renewing for the upcoming year for, you know, that is takes us over so that we don't miss out on that. All commissioners should have gotten information on things that are coming up with NAPC because they have your emails. So if you do have questions, email me if you don't have Kathy's email, so I can put you in touch with her. Or I can provide you the information. So all right, thank you very much, Kathy. Item 8H is event subcommittee. That's me reporting. We met fairly recently, but we're continuing to meet, determining what kind of event we'll be participating in August. It's going to be a lower level event than certainly last year. I'm working on things with people at the Tucson Museum of Art about the time capsule and so forth, and hope to have more to report to you on that next month. So item 8I is Preservation Award Subcommittee. Again, as I mentioned last month, we are going to run that in conjunction with the time capsule reburial at a cooler time of year, and I think it will be really nice and get a lot of people there. Item 8J is TPCHC Historic Preservation Advisory Working Group. So since Commissioner Lamb is not here, what about you, Commissioner Erickson? Will you report?
Yes, we have not met, but as I mentioned to Ian, when JJ returns from Australia, we want to start talking about the tribal outreach program in Pima County and have at least one good discussion on how that project is going.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so item 9 is the presentation by Desiree and Jonathan from the Tucson Historic Preservation Office on the programmatic agreement between the City of Tucson and the State Historic Preservation Officer regarding U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development funded program activities. I thought this was important for the full commission to learn about what programmatic agreements do, how these programmatic activities help the smooth functioning of things in the city. So Desiree, take it away.
Thanks, Terry. So Johnny is going to give the presentation, but I just wanted to acknowledge we also have someone from our Housing and Community Development Department here, Andrew Paredes, who works intimately with the actual housing programs. So if there are questions that come up about that, he's here to kind of fill in any of the blanks. But I'm going to turn it over to Johnny.
All right.
Okay. That's right. Before you start, who is, what's that person? Oh, Andrew. Hello, Andrew. Thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just wanted to get this correct for the chair.
Yeah. Howdy. I am going to share my screen. All right. Can folks see my screen?
Yeah. You want to maybe make it full screen if you can?
Yes.
That would be great.
Yes.
And what I'm going to ask commissioners to do, if possible, is wait till the end, because we're getting on to past 1:15. We want to give Jonathan, Desiree time to make their presentation, but we still have several other items after this. So,
okay. Thank you, John.
Okay. Yeah. So, As Desiree and said, this is a we're presenting on a draft programmatic agreement for HUD-funded projects, and this is between the City of Tucson and the State Historic Preservation Office. So, just as a little bit of background, this programmatic agreement, which would be like a legally binding document, would be for Section 106 obligations only, and you know, the City of Tucson has a lot of local ordinance related to cultural resources, like our historic preservation zone ones. And so this programmatic agreement is explicitly just related to Section 106, and all other city policy and other laws still need to be followed as written. And so just want to clarify that. And this is specifically for, just as a background, Section 106 of the NHPA relates to review of federally funded projects to assess for their impacts on cultural resources. And this programmatic agreement would be through housing and urban development funded projects only. And for these projects, the City of Tucson serves as the responsible entity for HUD. So oftentimes, with Section 106, the federal agency will initiate formal consultation, and HUD has basically designated the City of Tucson to initiate consultation. We have an existing programmatic agreement that is in, you know, a lot of need of update and clarification. And, you know, the city of Tucson has been working with our state historic preservation office on this on and off for several years, to make this update and going through several rounds of revision. And, the overarching goal of this programmatic agreement is to streamline the 106 process and also really use, the city's, as Secretary of Interior qualified, staff to, you know, help the process along. Typically speaking, you know, we have like several different, you know, programs that could potentially apply for this, you know, like that would be applicable for this program. And oftentimes, you know, most of the time they are, you know, owner occupied, you know, houses, and we'd use federal funds to, do small home rehabs, like, you know, a new roof, weatherization, lead paint removal. So basically, you know, you can sometimes, you know, consider these as, you know, almost like emergency repairs and repairs, you know, to help make, you know, people's homes healthy and, you know, healthy and livable. And, you know, with city of Tucson, you know, we live in the desert and, you know, like a good roof is pretty critical for, people's health and safety during monsoon season. And so, you know, we have like the home investment partnership program. This could also apply for, you know, upgrading and maintaining our city owned public housing. There are weatherization programs and then, specifically, lead paint programs that this could be applicable for. And so, kind of the crux of the PA is to exempt certain things from Section 106 consultation, and this would still be like reported on in some batch reporting if it was exempted, and that would be actions on buildings less than 50 years old, actions on buildings previously determined by SHPO to be not eligible for the National Register of Historic Places, and then certain systems rehabs, certain interior rehabs and certain exterior rehabs. And I'm going to go through this list of, you know, certain items. And some of them are a lot, so I might not discuss everything, but this list has, you know, we've kind of gone back and forth with SHPO, for these. So replacements of interior plumbing, electrical systems, HVAC systems if the equipment's in their original location, and water heaters if they're in their original locations, and smoke detectors would not require a full 106 consultation for this draft PA. And then interior rehabs, we have a list of these, and I think it's important to note that it doesn't include significant interior alterations that could compromise the integrity of a property when the interiors are historically, architecturally, or culturally significant. And, you know, typically speaking, this, like, would not often apply to the kinds of buildings that would be evaluated under this PA, but we definitely made sure to include it. And types of interior rehabs that would require consultation would include replacement of floor coverings, weather stripping, repainting, interior door replacement, door hardware replacement, and Americans with Disability Act improvements like grab bars, lower counters, interior ramps. And then have an even longer list, about exterior rehabs. And I think the important thing is, you know, when we're talking about historic, you know, preservation related to historical period, houses, you know, we oftentimes look at, you know, roofs and windows. And so, we are kind of like specifying that, like roofing replacements would be exempt if they would be in kind, and the same with, door and window repair. Window replacement would be included on this, with in-kind. And then other things could be hardware replacement, driveway repair, installation of temporary ramps, termite treatment, foundation repair. I think again, most importantly was, really talking about doors and windows and roofs. And then, there's also an archaeology component to this. I will note that most of the applicable HUD-funded projects that come across our desk do not involve any ground disturbance. How it relates to archaeology, it's still very important to, consider, impacts to, archaeological resources. For any project that would include ground disturbance, we would look at it by qualified city staff. And, there could be, we could mandate that archaeological survey would be required. If any archaeological sites were identified during survey or through a record search, we would consult. And if it did not identify any sites, it would be reported within a batch report. And any potential for adverse effects, we would need to do full Section 106 consultation. And I'd also just like to tell the commission that we are doing ongoing travel consultation with this PA, and so we have received some comments from tribal nations, and we are working to address the comments. And so that's kind of a lot of information, and I'd like to open it up to any questions that that folks have about this.
Yeah, please. Thank you, Johnny. Please raise your hand, and I'll call on you in the order in which you put your hand up. Ian?
Yeah, I just it's not a question. I just wanted to give a little education on HUD specifically, because we have a PA as well. HUD, just for your information, HUD is the only federal agency under federal law, under 24 Part 58, that is allowed to 100% delegate federal responsibilities to what is considered the responsible entity, the grant recipient. That means that the city of Tucson is assuming the role of HUD in accepting the monies, that they can be sued in federal court. So the PA is a mechanism that really empowers the HPO in city government for HUD-funded programs, because it requires the city at risk of legal challenge to follow the law in Section 106 and the considerations that it puts into how monies are distributed to applicants, right? And as part of that review, the county has – we provided our PA that we – it took – 3 to 4 years to execute with the State Historic Preservation Office because of really minutia on it. And so the model they're using is tried and true. It works really well with the county. Scott, we do about 350 to 400 HUD reviews a year. Many of them are, I would say 99% of them are cleared purely based off of the PA. Before the PA, I wanted you to know that we were reviewing and had to consult with SHPO on a toilet flapper replacement. I kid you not, a toilet flapper. So it is all of these things that have really no potential to affect resources that this is what it's covering, but allowing expedited distribution of the federal funding to meet that environmental requirement. So I just wanted to provide a little background on that.
Great, thank you. Desiree, yeah. Would you like to add something?
Yes, and I wanted to see if Andrew, since he took the time to join us today and works on a lot of these projects, could wanted to say anything, first of all, and or it might be helpful to hear some of the examples of the types of things that you see common that this would help, you know, this would help smooth our the review process for.
Certainly happy to address you all, and I appreciate Ian's comments. I don't think we've seen anything as drastic as a single toilet flapper, but what this is, what this will enable us to do is the city has a very robust residential rehab program and lead paint hazard mitigation program. So this allows us to essentially assume the role of SHPO, allows our HPO, Desiree and Johnny and their team, to assume the role of SHPO to review the request to use federal funds to remediate lead paint in a home occupied by children under six. So if lead paint's found in the windows, this allows us to use HUD money to replace those windows in kind, same look, et cetera, with new non-lead paint, you know, windows to, you know, to provide, as Johnny said, a healthy and safe living environment for the residents. So currently, we are consulting all of these through SHPO. So that's adding an extra 30 to 45 days sometimes in the time frame to finish these rehab projects. And right now, as we're coming up on monsoon season, we will see requests or need, desperate need for a new roof. And so, as you all know, you know, 4 to 6 weeks waiting period to simply, you know, put a new roof on a house can, you know, could have drastic consequences. So this PA, as negotiated and as Ian has indicated at the county, works really well for us to be able to be responsive to these low-income homeowners to make these necessary health and safety repairs to their homes. What we're not talking about, and I'm looking at Desiree to shake her head at me if I get it wrong, but what we're not talking about is ground-up new construction or new development. This is really just as it relates to small-scale, you know, single-family residential rehab programs to address very needed health and safety concerns.
Yes, Bennett, just one more thing I'll add is that it only applies to non-historic, non-eligible buildings. So anything that is historic, this PA does not apply. It would still have to go through regular consultation. So I just wanted to make sure that was really clear. We're talking about buildings that are ineligible, not age-eligible, you know, things like that. And that's our responsibility. At our office, we would screen for those in case they are, you know, eligible. But that's a good summary.
Well, thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Desiree. I just wanted to be sure that you keep us updated on the progress of getting the PA through the system. And, you know, I think that would be a really good addition to help things. And then maybe report out to us on just, I'd like commissioners to see just how successful this program is at moving forward these improvements for citizens of Tucson. I think that would be really great. And if anyone has questions about PAs and what important tools they are when they're well constructed and thought through and consulted on, then please ask me or Google it. I mean, PAs are really important. So anyway, any final questions on that? Okay, I'm looking at both pages here of people with hands up, and I'm not seeing any. Thank you, and thank you all, Andrew, Desiree, Johnny, for this thorough presentation. And we look forward to further updates. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, item 10 is monitoring and preserving historic buildings and landscapes owned by the city of Tucson. Ken, do you have anything to add other than what you already added with during the Pima County update? Go ahead.
Yes, and this is for Desiree, and I'm going to forward this. It's about the Magnetic Observatory building. I've been doing several presentations around town, and a gentleman came up to me afterwards. He's retired from the Coast Guard. He's very involved with the Coast Guard Museum, which is out in the east. I can't remember the town. But he was tremendously knowledgeable about the Magnetic Observatory. And I am I won't read this now, but essentially the research they did out there from 1909 to when they turned all the buildings over to the city and the city let them just fall into disrepair and neglect all this, that's provided the information that's allowed us to do satellites, atmospheric issues, seismology, all these things, and it's information that's still being built on today. I sort of knew this, but they have the magnetic observatory buildings in the East National Park, and they're hidden out of view. He knows where they are, and we show them on a map, but they're hidden from people. So it is on level with Stewart Observatory and Tumamoc Hill, the desert lab, and the city just over the decades has neglected this, and hopefully this time we can get something done before it all collapses. And it's just been, and I'll blame the city, it's been a celebration of ignorance for decades. And hopefully we can still preserve what we have out there and let people that live in Tucson realize this was the third portion of Tucson being a great center for, and continues today, for scientific research, that the city is just totally in neglect. Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. We are working with Jasmine Chan from Parks. She put me in touch with the Parks person who oversees that park, so we can set up a tour. So I'll follow up with you, but should happen before the next commission meeting.
And I will certainly forward this. And this gentleman I've met, he has all kinds of information about this and the importance, and how the Coast Guard uses this information and continuing education information, as now even with the war that's going on in Iran. Very important.
Well, thank you, Ken, and thank you, Desiree, for working with Ken on this. Okay, item 11 is Commissioner Summary of Current Events. Does anyone have an event they'd like to share? Carlos?
I don't have an event, but for years we had that item on the Commissioner Steers item on the border wall damage, and is there any update? It hasn't gotten any worse since they bulldozed through those intaglios. Has it?
Well, that was just very recent, that article that I believe, Helen, did you send it to me or JJ did, and I sent it out? Yeah, and right away, and I forwarded it to a friend of mine, Samuel Fant, at the Tohono O'odham, at the Nation, to see if, you know, what they're thinking. I mean, because I don't have an update, but I think that we're not hearing things because, any kind of Section 106 has been, exempted. It's been exempted. It has been for ages. And so there's so much important stuff. And I talked to a client of mine from Luke Air Force Base, and she said that, they're moving over into really sensitive cultural natural areas as well. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what can be done unless the tribe does what they did for when the border wall was separating, was built on top of an ancestral burial area. I mean, literally, it divided. Half was in Mexico, half was in Arizona. And our company worked on it with the tribe, and that was because the tribal leadership went to Washington. It could have been it was a different administration, so I'm not sure if that's even, you know. Anyway, Ian, do you have something on this?
Yeah, I was going to say so. Obviously, Supervisor Allen, whose district this is in, is greatly concerned, is a huge proponent of supporting our, especially the Otham and the Aki. And with regards to the Otham, while I believe that there are lawsuits imminent, do I believe that the county will stand prepared to potentially do an amicus brief to assist the tribe? I do. Don't quote me on that, but I know Congresswoman Grijalva was here, met with Supervisor Allen, obviously met with Chairman Jose. And so the county's definitely has eyes on it to support the tribe, but given the kind of federal sovereign nation duality and role, all we can do is support. But that's the only information I can provide you, Carlos. It's actively being monitored. It's an outcome that unfortunately is way too high up, and executive authority is basically waived. And until the Supreme Court would hear that, executive authority is waived any requirement to comply with environmental or cultural laws. And it's awful. So.
Yeah, it's very bad. So go ahead, Ken, and then Helen.
Yeah, I just need a clarification. Ian, maybe you would know. Supposedly they're going to start building a double wall, or they started that there wasn't enough room that there's going to be a double wall, and they're building another wall.
Correct. That is exactly what they are doing. They're building a new wall parallel to the old wall to have a double wall. End stop. I mean, it's so ludicrous to me, but you know, yeah.
Hang on. We got more time to have more ludicrous stuff going on. It's just crazy. Yeah.
Oh dear. Okay, Helen.
Yes, I just I wrote you this actually, Terry, as well. I think it's important that we have access to as much information as there is, and I don't know, Ian, is this something that Pima County would be able to give us a report on regularly, or who could tell us what's actually going on?
I think that your only source is what is available to the public, and that is through the media and how much the media actually covers it, right? Obviously, I mean, Terry has connections on the nation. I have personal relationships on the nation, but I can't leverage those personal relationships beyond kind of the inner trauma that's going on there. I'm happy to present anything I hear from Supervisor Allen's office or county administration, but I don't anticipate it's going to be more than we'll know in terms of the desecration. I think follow the Federal Register, I mean, to see whether there are any active lawsuits. Hopefully the media continues to cover it, because it's kind of like one of these stories, which is tragic, and then it just dies off and you don't know what's going on, when I think there's a lot of people in our region that care about it.
I am wondering if it would be possible for us at least to put this back on the agenda, so that if someone does have information, there would be an opportunity.
I can do that. Yeah, I can add it back on.
It's a very important subject right now.
Updates. Okay, that'd be great, and we'll do that. We'll put that back toward the end where we had Peters, and he sometimes he had information, sometimes he didn't. So I think any of us that see something, I'll always send out information. If you send it to me, I'll look at it. I'll send it for distribution. If I see other things, I will. I might have some other thing, you know, other sources, like Ian has other sources of finding things out. So we'll do that. Okay.
Terry,
thank you.
Terry,
yes. Yes.
One other question. Isn't this going for 1,000 miles? It's the whole southern boundary. This double wall that's going to be 1,000 miles, the whole
length. I'm not sure about the double wall, but I had a friend, a colleague in anthropology from Texas, and he emailed about it, and I said, I don't know what to tell you, who to get in touch with, but you know, what are the tribes in your area? Are they upset? You know, get in touch with them. Or are they nearby, or you know, whatever? And you know, it's, I think people are a little bit flummoxed about how to get involved. Like a former client of ours went to work for CBP. And so we forwarded him your thing, Helen, and said, oh, we thought you might advise them against this. Because we were annoyed with them for leaving where he was. And so, but I mean, it's like this person is a subject matter expert, and you know, they have one person in CBP. That's ridiculous, right? So anyway, anyone can contribute. If you see something, we can talk about it, and we'll have it on the agenda again. Thank you, Helen. Anyone else under Commissioner Summary of Current Events? Looking here, I'm looking on page 2, nothing on page 2. Okay, thank you. Item 12, call to the audience. Tracy, were any public comments received by the posted deadline?
No, they were not.
Thank you. Item 13, thoughts on inclusivity. Does anyone have thoughts they'd like to share? Okay, item 14 is schedule and future agenda items. We have received a couple ideas for future agenda items, and I will remember those. You can also remind me if you feel like it. Our next meeting will be June 10th, and I need any other additional agenda items to consider by May 29th. So thank you very much. Anyone want to mention an agenda item now? Excuse me. No. Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for your time, and we'll go ahead and adjourn at 1:44 p.m. And Tracy, if you could just hang on for a second afterwards, I'll ask you a quick question. And Helen and Gary, I will be in touch about meeting next week. It won't take very long. I would say a 20-minute meeting, but we'll try to coordinate on